Just trying to get those questions loaded up on the screen. We'll begin in just a second. It would be really helpful to have a Bible with you so you can follow that through and open your way to Matthew 28, page 1000 of the church Bibles. And you might just like to read through again for yourself the last few verses of Matthew 28, beginning at verse 16. If you've got the church Bibles, it's titled The Great Commission. We'd encourage you, if you're upstairs and you're able, come downstairs and join us here so we can be a bit more together. There'll be a bit of space at the end to be able to move back around and spread back out. Don't worry about taking someone else's seat. They won't mind. So these four questions that are up on the screen are what everybody's looking at in different ways and what we're exploring together in different ways. And you get the joy of listening to me for a little bit in our way of exploring this together. But what I'm going to do is share some of my thoughts around in response to some of these questions and what I see coming from the passage. And then at the end, there'll be a little bit of space and time for you to think about that for yourself. What are your responses to those questions? If you want to talk with the people around you at that point, that's fine. But there'll be a bit of space and time. During some of that, some of the others might start coming back and joining us before we. What we do at the end is we conclude together with a chance to share what God's been saying to us as we've explored in different ways. So the first question, what does this story tell you about God? I started a little bit earlier than the set reading. It was at verse 18. Verse 17, when they saw him, that's Jesus, when they saw Jesus, they worshipped him. Actually, the disciples, as they come and they see Jesus risen again from the dead, they come and they worship him. And actually, it tells us something about God, who God is in Jesus Christ. That Jesus was someone who was worthy of worship. That Jesus was God. Because actually, the Old Testament is very clear that you only worship God alone. So if they're going to come and they're going to worship Jesus, it tells us clearly that they recognized at this point that Jesus was God and worthy of their worship. But also, actually, as they come and they worship him, as they come and they worship God, that is what comes before they receive this great commission. Before Jesus comes and tells them what it is they're to go and do, it starts with them recognising who Jesus is. And actually, it's that recognition of who Jesus is that leads on to the call to go and tell others. If we come and we worship Jesus, we come and we recognise who he is, what he has done in our lives, then that should lead us on to go and want to tell others about who he is and what he has done. And actually, as we do that, as we go on and tell others about who Jesus is and what he's done, as we're part of his mission in the world, that should lead us in turn to come back and to worship him, having recognised actually all that he is doing in the world. To put it the way someone clever put it, our worship should lead us to mission. And our mission should lead us to worship. It starts with the worship of Christ that leads us into mission that brings us back to worship him once more. What does this tell us about God as shown in Jesus Christ? Well, Jesus says in verse 18, he comes to them and says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. All authority has been given to me. If we were to skip back in Matthew to Matthew chapter 4, you'd see that Jesus was also once off of this same kind of authority. In Matthew 4, when Jesus was tempted in the desert, the devil came to him in the third temptation and said, I'll give you authority over everything. I'll give you the powers over all the nations and kingdoms of the earth. It can all be yours. Only bow down and worship me. Jesus is tempted with the offer of authority over everything. But it's a temptation to grasp hold of authority over everything. It's a temptation to have that authority without serving God, without following what God has asked of him, without doing what it is that God wants him to do, to grasp hold of it. We're told very clearly in Philippians that Jesus humbled himself. He didn't take hold of what could have been his, but made himself lowly. And because of what he did on the cross, because he was willing to be obedient to his Father, it is as a result of that that he is given authority over all things. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Of course, when we hear that, we might think, well, the world doesn't quite seem to be the way that we think Jesus might want it. And of course, it doesn't mean just because he's got the authority that everything is the way that he would want it to be. Anyone worked in a company will know that everything in a company is not always the way that the boss would want it to be. And you might have all the authority, but not everything is the way you would want it to be. Or the illustration that's often used about the D-Day landings, that after the D-Day landings there was this great kind of victory, there was this surge towards victory in Europe. It was that defining moment that seemed to turn the war around. And yet the war was far from over. There was a long way to go before it was completely finished. The world is not yet as Jesus wants it to be. But he is at work in the world, person by person, bringing them under the rule of his life-giving love. And the thing we see here, the challenge for us, is that, of course, the way that he seeks to do that, the way that he seeks to work, and to be at work in the world, bringing it more to be the way that he would want it to be, is through us. That he calls us to go. And we've seen it. We've seen it in Matthew. We've seen it in the Sermon on the Mount. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. If we think the world is a dark place, maybe it's because the light isn't bright enough. If we think the world is going rotten, maybe it's because the salt that's meant to be the preservative of the world isn't doing its job as it should be. Jesus calls us to go and to make disciples. In fact, he's calling us to do just exactly what he has shown us through Matthew, him doing. We've seen through Matthew, Jesus going and calling people and lifting them up and raising them and sharing with them and teaching them and training them. And now he calls them to go and do just what he has done. To go and do as he has. To go and make disciples. It tells us something about God and the call that he has for us. The second question, who are the people you want to tell about Jesus? Who are the people you want to go and tell? Of course, that's something personal for each one of us, isn't it, to be thinking about. As we've been doing this series, thinking about gossiping the gospel, one of the encouragements has been to have maybe two people that you could be praying for, that you could be praying for and praying for opportunities to share your faith with them, that you could be praying for and praying that they would come to know more about Jesus. But actually, there's a kind of presupposition in that question, isn't it? Who are the people you want to tell about Jesus? It assumes that actually we do want to go and tell people. It presumes that in that sense we've had enough of a grasp of the good news about Jesus, of the love of God, that actually we have that desire to go and share with others. That actually we're willing to go through whatever it may be, the difficultness, the uncomfortable side of it, the risky side of sharing our faith with others, that we know enough of something of the love of God and his love for all people that we're willing to do that. In essence, it comes back to that we worship God enough that it would drive us into mission. Who are the people that we want to tell? Well, here we see in the passage actually the call to go to all nations. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. And of course, Jesus here is talking to a bunch of Jews who at this time are only really thinking about going to the people of Israel, going to people like them. We have to go into the story of Acts as you read through that. You know, we very quickly think, all nations, oh, well, it's really clear from the start. This is about going to all people. But Jesus here stands and he talks to a bunch of people who haven't quite clicked yet that this is something for absolutely everyone. Even though we see through the Gospels these pointers towards what Jesus is doing, it takes the story of Acts, which we get told the story multiple times about what happens with Peter and the sheep coming down from heaven and the animals and what God said and Cornelius and the Holy Spirit at work in the life of the Gentiles. We have to read that story through Acts again and again where they get how important this is, that actually what Jesus has done isn't just for Jews, but was for all people, for all nations, that the gospel is for all. It's to cross barriers to people who are different. This was the challenge to them, to cross barriers to people who are radically different from them. And it's a call for us again today to cross the barriers to people who are different from us. across those divides, whether they be cultural or national or class or ethnic or ethical in the way people behave. The gospel is for all. We're called to be a people who share it. In the huge diversity that there is in the town and the places where we are today, there's all those sorts of barriers and divisions that there's a challenge for us to cross. But also the call still today to go around the world and to share the gospel to all nations. It's why our mission links are something really important to us. Those who we support, those some who are local and sharing the gospel here, others who are around the world in different countries all over the place, who are seeking to work for God's kingdom and share their faith where they are. I'm privileged in September. I'm really thankful that the church are releasing me to go and spend a week in Bulgaria. And I've got the chance to go and visit George and Ann Todorov, who are in a Baptist church in Varna. I'm going to spend a little bit of time with them and get a chance to... I've never been out there to see where they are before. And I get some time as well to go and be part of a conference and help training up some young leaders, some young church leaders who are working in Bulgaria. And the fact that the elders are willing to release me to go off and do that is part actually of our vision of a church that isn't just about us here in this place, but actually it's about something broader and something across the world. Go to all nations. There's a welcome to all. And the wonderful thing, if you've ever had the chance to go around the world, or if you've ever really shared with the different nationalities represented in this church, or if you were just here last Sunday, you gather quite quickly that actually the gospel has all sorts of different expressions in different nations around the world. That actually there's all sorts of different ways that people worship and express their faith and talk about it and share it and practice it. There are all sorts of different ways that gets carried out. And actually we can learn and we can grow and we can come and worship God more as we share in that together. I felt quite humbled last week as we shared in so many different ways, as different people prayed in different languages, as we sang different songs, as we did things even just a little bit different from what we normally do. I felt quite humbled about those who were able to bring such a rich diversity in the way things are done. Yet I've got one language and one style in the way that I do things. And yet there's people who can manage to move in about five different languages and different ways of doing things. There's so much more that actually others have to offer as we see the different ways the gospel is expressed. Because none of us have it all and none of us have the complete picture. We can grow as we share in that together. And even something of what we're doing in the summer through these different services where we explore in different ways is a recognition that we are different. That for some people this isn't their primary learning style to sit and have someone talk with them for a while. That for some people actually they are more creative. That actually as they go and they think and they reflect and they pause, actually they can be aware of what God might be saying to them. That actually some people they learn more as they talk and they discuss together. And actually we benefit from the richness and our diversity of who we are as we allow those different expressions and we learn from one another. What is the good news? What is the good news? And of course, something of the question there asks us to go maybe beyond the passage, and Helen began us with John 3:16 and 17, that reminder at the heart of John's gospel of what the good news of Jesus is. But I want to pause for a moment and just look at what actually is in this passage that reminds us of what the good news is. Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them. That call to go and baptize people, that call to be baptized. Because actually in baptism we see this powerful visual aid of what the good news is. That in baptism we see that powerful picture of when someone's baptized in the way that it's done here. They go down into the water. They are buried with Jesus Christ in the water. It's a baptism of saying, I believe that what Jesus has done, that his death was for me. That he has paid the price for my sin. And I want to die to the old way that I've been living. I want to die to a life that's about selfishness, about what I want. To die to a life of leading it my own way into sin. And when someone comes back from the water, it's a rising to a new life. It's a rising with Jesus to live a new life, being made complete in him. And even the water itself is a symbol of that, a symbol of the fullness of life. A symbol of knowing and walking with Jesus and finding fullness in him. And as we grow in our walk with him, becoming fully human in the image of our Creator. that essence of life of walking with Jesus, saying we need that life in him and his guidance as much as we need water to live. And of course it points us too to what Marshall was sharing from last week at the end in Revelation, where it talks about the city of God, the river of life, that picture of God with us and eternity with him. Little picture of what the good news is just through baptism. But what is the good news of the gospel to you today? And what's the good news of the gospel to those people who you might be seeking to share your faith with? Because we're very good sometimes at boiling the gospel down to simply being a ticket to heaven or sins forgiven. And yeah, sometimes those things are helpful and good illustrations and are true. But the gospel is something so much bigger than just one thing. And so what does it mean? What's the good news of the gospel to the people we might be trying to talk with and share today? How can we help them see how it is good news to them? Not that we're changing the gospel, making it something it isn't, but helping people see how it's relevant to them today. And what do you need from God to help you to share his good news? How do you need help in that sharing of the good news? Well, let's look a little bit at the help that we're offered in the passage. We looked already at Jesus' authority, that Jesus is the one who's in control, that we're told elsewhere that we're called to be ambassadors, that we're ambassadors for Christ, that we know the role of an ambassador, they're one who was sent, and they're one who's sent with authority, that Jesus has that authority, he sends us to be his ambassadors, that we're sent with something of the authority of Jesus in this world. But we're not actually just offered his authority here. The big promise that was brought out in the first reading that Helen did is the promise that he will be with us. Verse 20, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. The comfort and the assurance he offers us as we seek to go and step up to this challenge to make disciples is that he will be with us in all that we might face. I am with you. He's not even saying, I will be with you at some point. He's not saying, I might be with you. He's saying, I am with you. And nothing can take that away. The gospel that began with the incarnation, with Emmanuel, God with us, finishes with the same kind of promise. The same promise that Jesus will continue to be with us. The continued presence of Jesus through his Holy Spirit. And that he is the one who will help and sustain us as we seek to share this good news with others. He offers us authority. He offers us his presence to provide what we need as we go and do this. How does his authority and his presence help you, encourage you, help with the needs that you have as you seek to go and share his good news with others? And I want to finish with an illustration, a picture, if you like, from the Chronicles of Narnia, which I find quite a helpful one when we think about what his presence with us might mean. Some point in the Chronicles of Narnia, I can't remember which book it is in, some point through there, there's this wonderful scene where you get Lucy and there is an army coming at her. And it's nicely depicted in the film. You've got Lucy there stood at one side of a bridge. And an army that are in theory retreating, but are trying to get the Narnians into a trap. And they're retreating to try and come across this bridge to then turn around and fight them on the bridge. And on the other side of the bridge, stopping them in this plan, is Lucy. Lucy, who's the youngest one of the four who are in Narnia at this point. Lucy, who she gets depicted about being kind of age, sort of eight maybe, or something like that. And Lucy, the others got given like by Aslan in book one. They got impressive weapons and stuff and shields and swords. Lucy's the one who got the little drop of stuff that can make people better and a tiny little dagger. And you get Lucy stood there on the other side of this bridge with this army of men coming towards her. And she pulls out her little dagger as though that's going to do anything to this army of thugs that are coming towards her. And you kind of see the army come on the other side and they kind of look at her and they go, what? And then from the forest behind walks out Aslan, the lion, who in the Chronicles of Narnia represents God. and comes and stands with Lucy. And you get this picture of, actually, it's not about us, how weak we might feel, but it's about God with us. That as we go and we seek to fulfill this great commission we're given, we go with a lion, or rather with God, who's much stronger and more powerful and mighty than any lion we might possibly imagine. We might not always feel confident, we might not always feel we have everything together, but we can go with courage because Jesus says, I will be with you.